about how we should try to approach this problem of handling all these observables. In some way, I'm much more comfortable with the deviation potential, despite the fact that this model based, because I know how to deal with it. I know how to take care of things like the 220 MeV proton-proton result. I also think I know how to integrate that down rigorously, at least in the two-body problem. And I know how to produce phase shifts from that potential. So that could be something that's used directly in an effective theory to match coefficients. And I think I also know how to figure out, when you're doing such matching, is how bad are the errors? That is, what are the uncertainties due to the fact that the higher order terms P to D wave is being omitted? The question is how to put all this together in some sort of framework that makes everybody happy. So anyway, comments from the EFT people. You have to fit something. And so you're sort of in the same boat that we are, that we don't really have enough data. Parametrically, we could start with the DDH potential, whereas coefficients are essentially unconstrained, and figure out how to parametrically integrate that down to some lower energy potential. But I'm trying to figure out what that gains us right now.
Well, okay, so I'm kind of on the opposite pole, like I want to have clean hands, right?
I'm a nuclear physicist. I don't worry about that.
So to the extent that you start to introduce model dependence and these sorts of uncertainties, it's a point well taken that you do the best you can with the theory you have, right? And I think that there is possibly a way to, one of the things that Jared studied was the mu dependence of the sort of matching that you're talking about. So pursuing that and seeing how well that can be gotten under control, maybe by just almost using that mu dependence as another parameter. I hate to do that because it's messy and stinky, but it would be a possible pragmatic approach to moving forward. Just nod.
Okay, I could do that.
I'm a little worried about this delta function potential and how to parameterize this in an actual calculation, because I think in the strict delta function framework, right, my interaction becomes proportional to the scattering length, which is exactly where this Kaplan-Savage problem pops up. That's the large N becomes hidden and obscured by other things, right? So I think this is something that needs to be carefully studied. I mean, it's related to what Michaela was talking about, right? That if you just use the delta function, there's these strong dependence on everything and whatever happens, right? So I think this is something we need to be very careful about. Also wanting to make sure that we can use the large N constraints.
Yeah.
I think there's ways to do this, but I think one has to be careful and aware of that problem that you can hide large N behavior if you make a wrong turn somewhere.
Whenever I see a delta function or even a derivative operator, I think of living in some effective Hilbert space that I know about. The question is, you know, if you did start from the viewpoint that DDH plus AB18 is the world, and we're just trying to figure out how to go down in some scale and reproduce those results, that's a doable problem.
But you know that it's not the world.
We know that it's not the world. However, it is kind of nice that it has.
And let's just review. A potential is not a physical thing. The potential is not, meaning that if I have a potential and I hand it to Jared and he sticks it all on with a wave function that's not compatible, I mean, this is the trouble with the hybrid model.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's however you, when you do integrate down, clearly you have one interaction that's weak and it's going to talk to a strong interaction to get a weak matrix element in the reduced space. And what that means is you have to pick both a strong potential and a model for the weak potential to make any progress at all.
I'd rather start with a field theory so that I can actually integrate down with that field theory.
That would be lovely.
So how, in that strategy, how do you deal with the inconvenient truth that there are pions?
Close your eyes.
Okay, so let's just talk about strong interactions for a minute. And you know, I may get pushback from people who do hybrid, you know, but just doing chiral perturbation theory all by itself, or these chiral EFT all by itself, is currently problematic. There are incredibly large cutoff dependencies, and we know that it's not theoretically rigorous, and this has been studied very well by UK guy.
Mike first.
Yes. But you know, one moves pragmatically forward and does what one can, right? So I think as long as at every point you recognize the possible mistakes you could be making and try to estimate the uncertainty that it introduces.
I think we're in such a bad state right now that we don't have any set of consistent numbers on any for any model to really compare. That there are a lot of things we can do that will improve the situation.
So I think I think I agree with you. If you do want to use things that have more than three bodies or are energies beyond whatever 20 MeV or something like this, then making sure then timeless EFT is not applicable, right?
Yeah.
The end of discussion. We don't. Well, maybe for A equal to 5, I can, if somebody was going to look at this again in the strong sector, right, we could, maybe there's something. But right now, I agree, and especially if we want to go to higher energies.
But it's not necessary if you have the experiments at low energies.
If you have the experiments at low energy, absolutely. As soon as you give us 5 really good numbers, and the nuclei-nuclei system will go home.
So notice that my sentence had an if in it. So if I wanted to go to high energies, right, then I agree. I think it's so this is the arrogance of the EFT person. Right? We know that timeless EFT is correct. Right? It's just symmetries can't be incorrect. That is the arrogance part. So to make sure that whatever model you're using matches this at very low energies, I think that's a very good approach. Right? So to make sure that my low energy limit reproduces something that comes from an EFT. I like that idea. I'm very much in favor of that. And also to use the large NC, you know, constraints that people have derived to make sure that those also match. I think that's also a good idea. Now, whether this is a modified DD8, I don't know what you want to call it. If that is a mesonic change, then so be it. Right? I don't.
In that case, why not just do chiral perturbation theory and include parity violating couplings?
You know, my view has not been successful in the strong interactions, so I don't think there's any reason it should be successful in this application.
Well,
I don't see anybody doing any realistic calculation that's not rigged up to fit many body properties. I mean, do we really have EFT people that can compete with, say, Joe's calculations of form factors in helium-4? I don't think so.
Well, we haven't necessarily seen a consistent implementation of this in the strong interactions.
I mean, we have calculations with at least the EFT inspired. I suppose you could argue about whether we can pull it consistently. Presumably, they're not. I'm not sure anyone is. So we. It's not that we haven't been taught that. And they seem to work reasonably well up to oxygen. So.
Okay, but DDH doesn't work either.
Yeah, so the issue with DDH is it's so limited. It has the 5 degrees of freedom you need basically for the SP amplitudes. Unless you include H1 prime, it only has one other parameter. And you already know in the PP, at 220 MeV, you need a PB partial wave. So you're done. I mean, it's anything beyond that, anything you want to predict that does not depend on that one particular PB partial wave is not in the theory. I agree.
And at least operationally, you know what the Lorentz structure has to be, And so that's in some way why I'd like to advocate for, rather than mocking up the potential you need with exchanges of fictitious particles that aren't really dynamical of those energies, you have a contact interaction, you know how many PD terms there are.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know.
In principle, yeah.
So you want to write something down with three gradients, delta function with, in all possible PD. I mean,
no.
You can do that phenomenology
okay.
if you want.
But it's not a delta function, right? Because it's a Lagrangian, and you're looking at matrix elements, and so there's no weird.
It's not. But that's not how people calculate few many body systems, right? It's not. I'm all for it too, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all for doing Lagrangians in field theory, but.
So why is it that many body people don't do that?
Because it doesn't work.
Who's tried it?
Well, I mean,
it doesn't scale, I presume, does it?
I'm sorry.
Does it scale?
I mean, my friends up in Seattle struggled forever to understand the three body system, and they basically walked away from that problem after several years of work. Predict a why.
In 3LO?
We could attend 3LO.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't work.
But it does with errors.
Well, it's no worse than the potential levels. They're not much worse. It's within the errors it works, but the errors are just very large.
Yeah, but that's because that's the order it is.
Yeah.
So it does not work.
But I mean, it's probably just because in some order you get a term, which is fine-tuned, which you fit to ALO.
Well, I've done a graph here of all of the chiral potentials on plot on a line as a function of the three-body force they use. And every one mixes this big box that's the saturation density. That's what we're up against.
Okay, but this is...
Doesn't it give you the right radius of the nuclei you calculate?
Of the nuclei?
Yes, really light nuclei.
What are we talking about? Because I'm certainly admitting that what we have now is three bodies and no higher.
We're talking chiral leakage.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's nuclear matter, chiral EFT. That's the saturation box right there. These are all the possible theories that you can run. And none of them make.
You need the kind of thing to hit the equations when it's staked.
Just trying to get the equation staked.
So how is trying to go?
The tester line that comes from all these potentials doesn't hit the saturation density. So that's why I go ahead.
Maybe I'm not understanding what exactly we want to do. So you have a GDH potential that encodes a subset of weak interactions, and you can marry it with strong interactions that are consistent. Okay. So you're wanting to do like an AV18 or something? What do you want
to do? Absolutely. Something that absolutely fits. So you know at least that when you're comparing a King Gilligan core with a calculation in a deuteron or the proton-proton system, the same set of copies is being used everywhere. I think we're so badly off today that we're not doing even that.
Okay, so to the extent that AV18 basically encodes all known data, I'm happy with it. But let's recall what was the thing before the LHC? Remember how everybody said, new physics, and that was because they saw that the ratio of B quark to C quark decay was totally outside the realm of anybody knew.
I must have missed that.
And you remember that they figured out it was not beyond the standard model physics. It was that they were using a particle distribution function that had been fit totally perfectly for Fermilab energies, right? But you take it over and you try to apply it outside its realm of applicability, and they just had to change it. So let's just be aware that with AV18, I mean, does it work with the AY? No. So.
Is Joe hiding again?
No.
So in other words, it does encode all of known physics, but it can't predict unknown physics.
I mean, so, I think if you tried to make an error bar for that, it would encompass the data, right? I mean, the problem with AB18 is very, you know, it's a fixed particular.
Yeah.
I'm not wed to that. You can use some of these chiral potentials that are local or close to local.
So you said something that sounded good to me, let me say what I understood you to say. You need a rigorously developed phenomenological potential that can allow you to interrelate different measurements.
Rigorously developed,
yeah.
Phenomenological.
Look, I'm
conflicting statements.
What I'm saying requires a certain amount of suspension of disbelief from theorists. So now the argument I want to make is if the future has to be some collaboration between experimentalist and theorist, and the experimentalists are doing experiments that really make sense. That when we, you know, we do experiment X, we'll learn something. So consider a white paper that doesn't make that argument, that doesn't say, okay, here's how we're prioritizing experiments we're going to do. You won't get any money for it.
Okay, but it's obvious where you should put your money is where the theory is solid, which is in view body asymmetries.
Yeah, but then you need experiments.
Isn't that the point of the white paper, to try to convince people what experiments to do next?
So you need theoretical arguments and compare what's possible, what's interesting. So it has to work in that space.
Well,
it doesn't have to be an either or. Well, I'm not arguing that you should not make the theory rigorous. That would be great.
So we have a rigorous theory.
Well, okay, but you need a rigorous theory that can evaluate the impact of different experiments. And you can't apply pi and CFT to P alpha.
Right.
But we can state what experiments it can be applied to.
Yes.
But look, if you look at the nuclear equation of state work, which I think is where these guys have put the most effort in, the fact that they are now rigging it up phenomenologically to reproduce data tells me this is no different from any other model. I mean, they don't really know how to calculate anything in Gaussian 40. They're just really embarrassed by the fact that their radii are 10% too small. We know energies go like a cube of a volume. That's a huge mistake. They don't know where it's coming from.
So maybe this is a difference in taste, but you know, you can, if you want to rigorously stay with the symmetries of QCD, then it sends you in a particular direction. And I agree that there are serious problems at the moment in pi on full, which is to say chiral EFT. And I think your point of view is, let's move in a different direction. Let's pick a model and try to explore that. And you know, that's a legitimate way to proceed.
You know, what you really like is if you had a complete set of weak interaction phase shifts, then everything would be done. You could build all kinds of effective theories, match them and find out. I mean, that's what your five experiments, the nucleon are exactly that.
But why don't we just do one EFT strong interaction model? I say it's a model because it has these issues that you say, and do something like AB18. I don't think they're going to be, the parameters will be different, but the phase shifts will not obviously not be.
So can you write down two such different strong potentials that can be used with all techniques, the data, quantum Monte Carlo, et cetera. That seems to be the thing that we really need.
Yeah, I think any of the local.
A new local potential.
Okay.
solvable for that.
Yeah.
And then what do you do with the weak interaction?
Yeah, that I don't know. I mean, because it's obviously somewhat, it's not ideal to have DDH, which has a road omega, and AV18, which doesn't have that. It just has some.
But you don't actually need that, as you guys tried to point out. If you're going to go ahead and do a chiral model, then you've got pion exchange. So what you have is a weak interaction pion vertex and 5 contact terms, and then whatever other contact terms you need to go up to P and D and so on.
That's fine. I would maybe do something. So I want to have 2 different strong interactions. Presumably, I want to have 2 weak interactions to go with each of them, which is somehow parameterized.
What are the 2 different?
Any 2
or something. How you
feel? I thought you were just going to pick 1.
It's not going to be
one. I said, I mean, it's not that much harder than one. The hard part is setting up the calculation, not doing it with 2 different strong.
Okay, so going with EFT, if it's no better and no worse than something we haven't envisioned yet, then why not go with the one that you know at some point you can connect to PCD?
I'm not so convinced of that based on 20 years of trying to solve these problems.
But that, I think, is a function of not really understanding these inconsistencies in the new dependence when you're taking.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so that's the thing to beat on.
But not all of us are that enamored with the standard way Carol EFT is done.
But not all of us are enamored with the DDH way of doing things, including the man who updated it to an EFT.
But there are a lot of conceptual issues with using EFTs of that form in certainly in particular disease. It's extremely difficult. Just the translational variance is vital in EFTs. There's nothing you can do about that. If you want to do a many body system and preserve translational invariance, you basically cannot use it the standard chiral EFT. You will see things like dots on nucleons that tell you the nucleon has jumped into some other Hilbert space and then back down again. That's meaningless. And the only basis that we know how to do translational invariance in, which is the harmonic oscillator. There's no such thing as one nucleon being in or out of the Hilbert space.
So I'm coming to Calvin's point, which is that we should come at it from both ends.
So that was kind of what I was trying to do with that potential, but it doesn't really do the job, because as you come down the scale, all those coefficients are run in some way. And that's what I wanted to be able to evaluate. Take it up to some GEV scale and then kind of just bring it down to a nucleon level numerically, see how it runs. So that requires a strong potential that you use with the weak potential, or else you can't calculate that.
Can I ask a question that people will hate me for because people are hungry? What are we actually trying to do when we say we want to understand synchronic parity violation? What do we mean by that? Right, so, because to me that matter, what we mean by that will influence how we go about it, right? So does understanding where the number for whatever it was, 185 calium that just happened, or whatever, I don't know what it was, right? So does understanding where that number comes from help us in understanding what we're trying to achieve? I mean, this is a big question and people are hungry, but. And so because to me, that the answer to that question will tell me which tools I want to use, right? It's not about, this is my favorite toy, I want to use it. It's, you know, what am I actually trying to achieve? And I'm really looking forward to Andre's talk, because to me, from my point of view, it's more understanding this interplay in the standard model between weak and non-perturbative, and how does all of this come about, right? Mm-hmm. And so for that point of view, I'm not sure that understanding where an A equal to 40 nucleus comes into play, this is probably not the most helpful thing to answer that question, right? So maybe this is a discussion point that maybe we can figure out what we're actually fundamentally trying to understand, and then that will maybe tell us also which experiments will be helpful in getting there. So I, you know, whether it's a chiral EFT in the end or an EDH-like thing with the right low energy behavior implemented in some way and amended by something, some, you know, pick two letters, contact terms. I don't really have a...
Yeah, so I must say, to my mind, I always would value a picture of some kind rather than a precise numerical evaluation, because ultimately that's how we describe understanding wave. Are there long-range features to this low-energy parity violating force? Are there not? But that's just, of course, the very beginning. But to my mind, I think I feel that Wick's remarks have force because, frankly, we've seen that the experimental program is extremely challenging. It takes a long time to do. We have still, nevertheless, a need to establish a hierarchy, even if it were, and if the early signs from these new experiments were more encouraging, we would still need more. And in particular, the value of these particular fluorine-18 system seems quite pertinent in order to down-select what we think is the correct hierarchy. So as soon as we move beyond two or three nucleons, then immediately it's forced upon us, how do we go beyond finalist effective theory? Because then we are clearly beyond the natural scales in which it applies. So in that regard, I think Wick's remarks have force, because we want to be able to understand how to interpret the fluorine system results in a concrete way of limiting the picture we'd like to build. So, but that being said, I would say that I don't think we can solve, you know, all of QCD at low energy before declaring victory of any kind in hadronic parity violation. I think the original, this idea, no, we have to understand nuclear saturation, we have to understand how to formulate chiral effective theory, we have to, I mean, in principle, that were a true shopping list before we'd ever be able to make progress in hadronic parity violation. Well, I mean, time to eat our Wheaties and kale in order to live long enough to be able to address all these problems. I think it maybe there's something very concrete to trying to focus on the few nuclear system, which is what Barry pioneered actually in regards to hadronic parity violation, Barry and Wick, a few years ago. Maybe this is something to focus on. So I guess, so the only question is, what is the minimal way that we can reliably connect systems of two and three nucleons to studies of fluorine 18?
Well, the other thing that's been left out is the scale of the effort required. Okay, these two nucleon experiments are very big deal. They're hard, and they're very expensive. You can make improvements in P plus alpha, and then the fluorine experiments were extremely modest, I mean, factors of 10 less effort than you can in these very difficult nucleon systems.
Yeah, we'd want to give them another cat.
In at least a decade.
Yeah, about a decade. Right. And so your remark is very pertinent to me. What question are we really trying to answer? If we're trying to understand, I mean, we're not going to test the standard model, okay? So we're really trying to find some nuclear physics type question.
It's such a bummer we can't test the standard model. There could be interesting theories to probe.
I know. I don't think that there's
something.
It's
never going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
So take NPD gamma. What do we sense of it? I always thought it was the high momentum component of the wave function of that system. That's what you're probing with these low energy measurements.
Not really. Well, if you go back to your question, anything except that doesn't involve a nucleus that you can calculate, you know, from a almost first principles potential model, I would forget. So I think fluorines are special because you can argue that you've got an argument that gives you the actual nucleon level coupling constants, not something else. Anything else you do that involves a shell model wave function, you're in some incredibly truncated Hilbert space. You have no idea what that coefficient is, how it relates to the free nucleon operator you might write down. I don't know how to address that problem very well either. So you're just stuck. So I would say, with the exceptions of the fluorine, even those require a lot more testing, which I think we should do. I would forget everything else involving a heavy nucleus. So
I think we've just found common ground, right?
And then, you know, yeah, to me, I would be satisfied as a first little step, say, progressing slowly toward the truth, is to have some consistent treatment of the data. I don't even think it's required to be necessarily complete or correct, mm-hmm. but just consistent.
Wait, how can it be consistent if it's not complete or correct?
That means that I'm not consistent.
You're such a purist.
Consistently, yeah.
I'm not using different types of options and different calculations. That's where we are today. I'm not doing a measurement. I really do think if you look closely at the P plus helium 4 calculations that are done, those don't have an exchange term in it, which is horrifying, because that's where the Fermi scale comes, Fermi-Wilhelm scale comes in. And there's no reason it should have been done that way today. Yet we don't, nobody's doing the calculation because it doesn't seem relevant. Now that we have this kind of nice result, that you're going to see a little bit of a pattern showing up because of the large NC camp, it's an excuse to go back and at least clean up the things we can in the DDH framework, and then just try to relate it to some of the things that we see in EFT. And you know, if we had a two nucleon potential DDH with AB18, you can actually integrate that down and see how the couplings evolve. And you can see, as you integrate down, if you want to throw away the 1P to D wave that's in there, then you can see where it is that you're going to get in trouble doing that. And those would be interesting exercises to do as well. Certainly doesn't solve all the problems. You know, someday, Andre will calculate everything to 1% like he has for GA. It will be in a box and we'll match our effective field theory to the box and off we'll be running. So
I'm a little bit worried about how the future will be influenced by the choices made here. Because when theorists make mistakes, we saw from 1927 to 1957, somehow there were 30 years gone because the theorists made a mistake. And I'd rather be flexible.
But this is a different kind of flexibility, right? Because you're not forbidding any particular phenomena. It's just simply a numerical prediction. So I guess I don't understand the thrust of your remark. Because before, I mean, it was Cox that always shut down because, someone said, oh, well, it cannot be that parity's broken. And here we're not doing that. We're not closing any doors. We're simply choosing some kind of description which would be consistent, hopefully.
From my point of view, the dominance of the DDH potential method, which was brilliant at its time, lived past its expiration date. And one of the originators knows that because he then made the update, made the advance himself to the effective field theory. And so it disturbs me when experimentalists are told by theorists, oh, go measure this and you're going to measure such and such a coupling. You're not going to measure such and such a coupling. The very best you're going to do is measure the product of some couplings as they interfere with another set of couplings, right? So the language matters.
I think we know F5. No, because we've got an expansion, and the heavy mesons enter at a negligible level.
Again, you have to fit your effective field theory to data. And
yes.
So the question is, what data do you think you're going to fit to get those non-constants? I don't think you've got data that you can fit to that you can handle consistently in a S-P wave effective field theory.
Well, what about putting in D waves?
You can sit down in a non-relativistic effective theory and write down how many there are, and there are quite a number.
No, but that's at least the...
It would be a start.
It would be a start, yeah. And if you look at the DDH potential, there is a choice made of what P to D waves are included. You can consider a model that actually puts in...
Okay. What I'm saying is, one thing that, as a naive experimentalist, just the few low-energy channels, you know, SPV. I mean, that's already a considerable broadening of what we do, but it's kind of, you know, dumbly obvious way to think about it.
So how you do that is you write down such a theory, and then you write it in the next order. And then you have some data you fit to, and you ask for the next order is no longer important. So it's kind of hard to do that, because you don't really have the data to know how good that picture will be. We know it's better than having just S to P, but we don't know where it exactly would be found. So the difference between that and what Barry does is he's actually got a potential that's based on the fact that you think there actually is a rho and omega, and that they dominate short-range physics. So they make a prediction of what the ratios are in the various partial ways, which is not perfect because he doesn't have enough degrees of freedom to predict all the partial ways that he needs to live.
But is that not, can't you do that same thing by introducing D ways into the battle off kind of way of thinking about it?
You'll get the same problem that eventually somebody's going to ask you, where can I use that potential up to? Can I use it for helium 4? Probably yes, but you don't really know when you stop. And it adds a lot of parameters.
That's true, but the benefit is that you actually do know, if you have a power counting, a priori, whether or not you can do helium pan to what order. And that's not true of potential models.
There are ways of doing the effective theory as a non-relativistic effective theory that actually, in some ways, is, at least for the strong interaction, is nicer than chiral EFT because you're not throwing in this pion with all its crazy short-range behavior. So I'm not all that enamored with, you know, trying to do a DFT necessarily.
I have a question. So suppose we decided what we want to do is really test pionless EFT, and we did all the experiments necessary to, you know, determine the five lambdas. And they agree, now there could be two outcomes. They agree swimmingly with the predictions, or they don't.
Which predictions?
Well, the pattern.
The pattern.
Oh, the pattern.
The pattern, yeah. Now, what? So those are two different outcomes. What would you learn in each case?
Well, I can make the analog to CKM matrix. You measure all four of those parameters and it either satisfies unitarity or it doesn't, right?
Well, what insight does it give you if it doesn't?
For the CKM matrix, it says there's physics, there's an extra family, or there's physics beyond the standard model.
That's not very.
It's the new physics of extra dark parity for violation part. What?
If there was this original motivation, I still think it's very nice that there's this interaction that we haven't seen in the standard model and want to see it. Because you don't know it's really there until you see it. So we wanted to see the strain is conserving neutral current.
Right, but now that question has been successfully answered decisively.
But it's, you don't see what you expect.
Well, no, I meant we know there are neutral currents. The question is how big a role do they play in this nuclei interaction? To do that, I don't know that you need any elaborate theory.
You want to know how the strong interaction renormalizes the nuclear force.
Right.
The same way that you want to know how
well, that's fine. Why is it renormalizing? Okay. Right. But now you're saying, I want to go out and measure neutron lifetime or something like that. There are lots of reasons why you want to do that. But is it really to understand why GA is the five-thirds, or whatever the...
Okay, it's just a...
It's a useful number that tells you how the real world works.
Exactly.
And I think this is not all that different. What we get are some useful numbers that explain how the world works, but it's a tiny fraction of the world. It's this very small effect in the presence of strong interactions. Do I need to know? I just don't know what. Your question's excellent. Now, what question are we really trying to answer?
I think the answer is we're trying to find this pattern. Does the pattern of the size, the relative size of these five quantities match the 1 over NC expectations? And in order to do that, I actually like Wick's idea very much to set up a standard set of calculations. Because what we're using now, I mean, David, you wrote down that big table of things. Well, that's calculated one way here, another way here. It would be nice to have a totally consistent way of calculating. I like the AB18 on top of DDH, which we know in some sense matches on to the EFT at low energies.
Well, by definition, are they only low energy, the five constants should be the theory. So we should reproduce everything. It should, in fact, in theory, should be equivalent to when you go up to high orders. So in principle, also kind of effective theory can reproduce everything. You need to put, increase the order of your terms, and then probably you can reproduce most probably there. And from this point of view, it would be interesting to pursue what kind of theories. It's also to demonstrate that the theory doesn't work could be nice. Like if the DH is a model. So this finite number of constants, when you have more measurements than constant, Tommy can prove that. In principle, effective theory can demonstrate that you need another order. This could be also tested.
What I'm missing is that they want to test ionless effective field theory. Trying to use it to describe these purity violating things is the wrong way to test it. It's extremely hard. The effects are small. I mean, there are lots of purely strong ways to test the theory.
Yeah, I mean, we know that ionless EFT works in its region of applicability. I mean, this was the calculation by Gautam Rupak is exhibit A, right? It's NPD gamma.
At low energy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're testing ionless EFT. I don't think that should be anybody's aim in this paired violent business. That's, like you said, it's the wrong end of.
It could be interesting to see at the end the relative weight of the different lambda, which are the values of the different lambdas. Could be interesting to learn something about the QCD or the weak interaction and the interplay between. And when you have the value for the five constants,
I have a question. question. I mean,
in principle, solving lattice, you can check up. The standard model should work well. So, the principle from lattice to kind of reproduce experiments. And time reversal relation uses, you are going to search things beyond standard model, so this is another stuff. But in principle, you cannot do without effective theory doesn't work. That means that you need only to add another order in another definition. But this could be interesting anyway.
Well, I think we should continue this because we have dinner coming up.